this is sort of coming back for me in a way, because I used to be the assistant director of the Institute of Cornish Studies. That's nearly 20 years ago. 20 years ago now, probably. And when Philip Payton was director. And I've been thinking about, I don't often think about sustainability. but I've had to, obviously, for this day. And actually, it's very interesting. I find that I do, although I don't think in the term sustainability, I do actually think in sustainable terms, as I think we all do, but sometimes we don't label it as such. In fact, I used my sustainable car this morning. Mm-hmm. I've got two cars. I now run a business. I run a business called Sporting Associates Environmental Limited, and we actually do ecological work, both in Cornwall and elsewhere, for planning. We do a lot of work associated with renewable energy. We work on the railways. We do lots of different things. And if I go to a meeting with clients, a big developer, I use my posh, expensive car. But round here, because if you turn up in a little battered old car, people think, well, you're either not successful or you don't like business. So people, unfortunately, in the business world, people do judge you on appearance. But for other work, I drive my little cheap, battered car, which used to be red and is now pink. And that's my sustainable car, so obviously I use that today. So it made me look at my company. Now, we do ecological work. And there's this triple bottom line, isn't there? The economic role, social role, environmental role. Our economic role is quite straightforward. We have five staff, we pay people, and we work a lot outside Cornwall. So actually we have brought and still do a lot of money into Cornwall. I've got a social role. We support our staff. We've had two recruits from this university. And we do things like we ensure that housing developments or wind farm developments have built according to some kind of ecological best principles where we can. And we have an environmental role as well. So we've been working, for example, in the Isles of Scilly. There's a really brilliant project run by RSPB, the Seabird Recovery Project, where they've been removing rats from the islands of Gough and St Agnes. And that's real environmental sustainability, because all the seabirds were leaving the islands because the ground nesting seabirds, the eggs were being eaten by the rats. The rats are now gone, and we're really pleased to be part of that project. And when we look at wildlife, we don't just look at individual species. We have to look now at a landscape scale. We look at sustainable ecology, sustainable wildlife. So we're looking very much at green corridors, a landscape effect. If you have a little population of butterflies over there on their own, they're probably going to die out. So they need to have other colonies so that they can have some interchange. And if one dies out, there's other colonies still around. So that's a very important part, I think, of what we do, because we live in an ecological fragmented landscape, and it's probably fragmented in social terms and economic terms as well. So I think it's quite a good different viewpoint. So we're looking at green corridors. We're looking, for instance, at Cornish hedges, which are cultural icons, part of the historic landscape, but also very important for this ecological connectivity and sustainability. So it's sort of trying to be cross-cultural, I suppose. And I do research here with, not at the moment actually with ESI, but with other parts of the university, conservation and biology, looking at the effect of light pollution on wildlife and the way that it affects wildlife. And again, part of the effect of light pollution is to fragment the landscape. So if you have a very highly lit road, quite a lot of species won't cross road, and you're causing a break in between the wildlife habitats. But it is complex. I think when you, if you're looking at the bottom, you're standing on the bottom looking up, it's complex. And one of the things I have looked at myself in the past is the mining landscape. And if you have a mining, if you want mining permission now, quarry permission now, one of the conditions would be to restore the landscape afterwards. But in fact, what we can see in Cornwall, and Cornwall is a brilliant example, but I was talking about this just to somebody earlier, it's a brilliant example, is that our quarries and our derelict mine sites have been naturally colonised by wildlife, and actually important. If they'd been restored to the landscape as it was, they would have less ecological value than they have now. So sometimes, you know, you need to sort of step back and look at things perhaps a bit more critically. And certainly, you know, as I say, a derelict mining landscape in Cornwall is of high value for habitats and a range of species. And that would have disappeared under the guise of sustainability, and it would have been probably a bad thing. Now, Colette distributed a number of questionnaires to people, and I think you might have sent one to me, but I didn't fill it in, I'm afraid.
That's
all right. And in fact, only 15 organisations, or well, 15, I think 13 organisations and two individuals, many of whom are here, completed the questionnaire. And it's interesting, there's only one big organisation, which was Cornwall Council, but there were no big businesses and no small businesses like me, I'm afraid, because we tend to look at these things and we've got other things to do, and which are more pressing. But I did have a look at it, and the results actually were really interesting. We've already seen just little bits about the, I think Edwina did a little bit about the vision of sustainable Cornwall, which I'll talk about in a minute. But one of the other questions was our cultural and behavioural challenges. And I just run through these, and then we're going to go on to three presentations. So, and the questionnaire was volunteer fatigue, which I can really understand. The increasing population, these are the recurring themes. Swamping by incomers. Dilution, and therefore dilution of Cornwall's heritage and culture. A negative media. There's also a problem of anticipating future legislation, and that's a real problem in renewable energy at the moment. It's a major problem when we don't know what the next government is going to do. We don't know whether they're going to abolish subsidies for wind turbines, for solar farms, whether they're going to encourage them. And it's impossible, therefore, to have any sort of long-term plan at the moment about some of and this, of course, is really important in Cornwall, in the wind turbines. So, for example, a company I work with, they were into terrestrial wind farms. One of their senior people thought there's no future in terrestrial, I'll go into the marine wind farms. And now she's made the wrong decision because the government are withdrawing funding from marine wind farms. We don't know where we are. So, and this is relevant to this particular topic, which is about community action or top-down. We don't know from the top what the legislation is going to be in future. Other things, remodelling the public sector. I think what they meant was that the constant changes in the public sector, engaging people and individuals, a recognition of the natural world for health and well-being, which I'm sure everybody here would recognise the importance of that, but people don't necessarily outside this room. The uneven spread of culture across Cornwall, which I think is very relevant and very important, because there's a lot of activity down here and around Truro, but not nearly so much up in Bude and Launceston, and particularly probably in the north. And adapting from the farming, fishing, mining to tourism, retail, health, whilst retaining the Cornish culture, Cornish identity. I think these are all really good themes. So the vision, one person who may be here said, let's revert to a 1950s lifestyle.
Dear.
Not sure the pop music was very good in those days, but I got some sympathy with that. I've been in Cornwall since 1976, and it's changed so dramatically, hasn't it, in that time? I used to drive, while my work, I used to drive around at night a lot. And in 1976, 77, you drove around at night. All the filling stations were closed, all the shops were closed. I was probably the only person driving. Now, of course, we live in a 24-hour society. So back to the vision. Diversity in local production, self-sufficiency in energy and food, the elimination of discrepancies in wealth and well-being, a greater provision of and research into renewable energy. Well, I think we are doing a lot of that. A low-carbon economy, a skilled workforce. And again, I think we're moving towards that, aren't we? And the university here, Sabreston to the university, has made such a huge difference to Cornwall. Whether it's a Cornish university or an Exeter university. Local community ownership. A place where the environment is acknowledged as a vital foundation for strong communities, culture and economic activity. A place where decisions understand the balance between culture and nature. I really support that one. A place where sustainable tourism is audited for synergy with Cornish culture, local businesses and local planning. And that's a brilliant one. A place of connectivity, which is back to my earlier theme, a place of connectivity between individuals, communities, places and the environment. And that's obviously what this conference or seminar is actually doing. So connectivity is vital. So we now move on to three presentations.